following presentation was recorded live by Voices from Jerusalem.
The subject is going to be, of course, Kiruv. And I was asked to make it very practical, and I plan to make it very practical, but I'm going to tell you stories. And stories are also practical. Good stories to tell, but there's a point to it. And the point, I hope to drive home the point that I want to make. So the first story I'm going to tell you is about one time I was down in Florida, fundraising, of course. You're going to Kiruv, you have to do fundraising. And I was visiting one of my old Talmidim, Rabbi Mordechai Blumenfeld, and he happened to marry an FFB. You know what an FFB is? Yeah? Sure, okay. From birth, right? And his cousin, her cousin, was there, a Hasidish Jew with a long black kapota, you know. And he knows that I've worked with Baal Tshuva, and I'm in the Baal Tshuva movement. So he tells me, you know, I admire your work, and I also made a Balas Tshuva. He also did a job. So I said, that's fantastic. Who did you make a Baal Tshuva? He says, a 95-year-old woman. You hear that? 95-year-old woman. He got her to be a Balas Tshuva. So I told him very frankly and up front, I said, you're the professor. You got to teach me what you've done. It's beyond me. 95-year-old woman, you want to undertake it? You haven't tried yet. 95-year-old woman made her a Balas Tshuva. You got to teach me what you've done. He says, okay, I'll tell you. He says, he was running a nursing home in Baltimore, near Baltimore, Maryland. He owned a nursing home near Baltimore, Maryland, and he had 300 beds, 297 goyim, 3 Jews. So he asked the shayla, I don't know if you need a shayla, but he can give the goyim treif food. Of course, treif food is much cheaper, yeah? But the 3 Jews, no question, you can't give them treif food, right? So he gives them prepared meals. Prepared meals, shreiber, kosher meals. Every breakfast, lunch, supper, they get a prepared meal. No, nothing what everybody else gets, right? Cost them a lot of money, but Jews. Okay, everything is going on fine. One day, an inspector from the state of Maryland, comes to this nursing home to see that everything is being done fine, you know, up according to the rules. And it's a very tough inspection, and they have to do everything, the doctor's sheets and the medicine chest, and everything's got to be, he sweats, 3 days inspection, everything is fine, checks out, the inspector congratulates him, didn't find any violations, he's ready to go out the door. This 95-year-old woman, one of the patients, approaches the inspector, and she says, he doesn't give me food like everybody else. He's discriminating against me. Discrimination? I mean, you know what discrimination is in America? He says, what are you talking about? Why not? I don't know. He doesn't give me food like everybody else. He calls over this Hasidish young man. He says, what is this lady saying? He tries to explain to him that, you know, she's Jewish, I'm Jewish, dietary laws, I can't... You know, you're in America, you can't force this lady to eat what you want her to eat. She's entitled to be treated like everybody else, and if not, we're going to shut you down tighter than a doornail. You better straighten it out or else you're gone. What is he going to do? He goes over to this lady and he says, look, you know that your food costs me 5 times as much as everybody else. It's much more expensive. Kosher food is much more. I'm losing money on you. I'm spending a lot of money on you. She says, don't spend money. I want to eat like everybody else. Save your money. Very reasonable. He says, well, listen, lady, he says, you know, everybody knows kosher food is much more delicious. It's much more delicious. This chazarai, this drink, that has a taste. Kosher food, kosher food. She says, listen, she says, I'm 95 years old. You think I taste anything? I don't taste nothing. I want to eat like everybody else. He says, listen, lady, you know, kosher food, everybody knows, hygienic, healthy. This trade stuff, this it could kill you. She says, listen, she says, I'm 95 years old. The quicker I go, the better. So he says, now, She washes her hands in the morning. She says, Moidani Mefanecho. She benches. She makes brochas. She lights candles at Erev Shabbos. She keeps Shabbos. She says Tehillim all day. She's doing everything 100%. I say to him, but okay, that's fabulous. That's fabulous. But what did you say to her? He said, I told you. What did you tell me? He told me exactly what I... What did you tell me? You didn't tell me a thing. What are you talking about? He says, I told you. What are you talking? Says, the guy told me. He shut me down tighter than a doornail. You forgot to believe it? Did I have a choice? I don't know what I said. But now, she washes her hands in the morning, Matilda, you're dying. She makes brochas. You see, the mistake that we make is we think we have a breva. Yeah? The first rule, practical rule, is you guys got to understand, you got no choice. It's you or there's nothing. And it's just a question of realization. Now the second point I want to make in that story is, he made one mistake, you see. You know what his mistake is? After he succeeded, he should have gone through it. What did he do that hit her so that he could teach me? And that's all that I'm going to teach you. You understand? I have done that. I know we don't have any choice. And I'll teach you what I learned. I remember what I said. You understand? Once it works, I remember. And I'm telling you that whenever you do something that works, remember it, share it, let us know about it. Let anybody who's really interested in Kibbutz, let them know about it. How does it work? Does that make sense? But it's just a question of realizing we have the power. We just got to know we don't have a breira. If you know you don't have a breira, boy, necessity is the mother of invention. You'll find a way. You'll find a way that nobody ever thought of before. Okay, so now, the second point that I want to make is a big mistake that is being made in the whole world today, and don't you guys make the mistake, is thinking that you want to make Bali Tshuva. It's not Bali Tshuva. It's a mistake. It's a misnomer. And that is going to mix you up. Say, get rid of it. So I'll tell you another story. And this story has a point. Rabbi Silva, Rabbi Eliezer Silva, you guys ever hear of him? You young guys heard of him? Yeah, he was a rabbi in Cincinnati. There's some there's some stories told about him that are really funny, but he was a very interesting gentleman. At the end of the Second World War, he got a commission. He was close to Senator Taft. He got a commission from General Eisenhower. And he was doing Hatzalah work after the war in the DP camps, getting guys food and kosher and getting them out and giving them Jews who survived, right? But he was, as an army officer, he had a jeep of GIs that took him around. And while he was traveling around, he also went to Poland. Yeah? And in Poland, every Sunday morning, he would go into a Catholic church at High Mass. Yeah, when they were making all their mass, you know, all their stuff, their ritual, Polish, Polakin, yeah. He'd walk up to the front. Of course, there were soldiers with him, yeah. But he walked up to the front, and he turned around, and he yelled, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You heard it, yeah. You didn't hear it. And then he'd look at the kids to see which ones reacted. Because, of course, there were Jewish children who had turned over to Catholics to be brought up, to be saved, and they were being brought up as Catholics. And he saved tens of Jewish children. Yeah? Now what do you say? Were those Jewish children Bali Tshuva? Or Tinik Shenishma? You understand? Is there anyone amongst us who had the courage who wouldn't do the same thing if you had soldiers there? Yeah? We know. You had the courage. It takes a certain... Right? But we know that. That's what you guys are doing. Whenever you have a chance, you have to say Nishma. You have to try to find some that teach Nishma. But you say they're Jewish. They even went to day schools. Nonsense. They've been brainwashed by society, brainwashed by their parents. It's just the same as being brought up over there, a Catholic, in Poland. They don't know the first thing about the first thing about being Jewish. And it's a tinik shenishmat. It has nothing to do with Bali Chu. This is a misnomer. It confuses you. It confuses you. You think you gotta get them to do tshuva? You just gotta say, you gotta tell them you're Jewish. You gotta tell them who they are. And it will help you tremendously if you remember. It's just this guy, he might be against you, he might be fighting it. Those Catholics, those Jews who will bring board as Catholics, will go out and persecute Jews too. Yeah? He's still a tinnish shenish. Does that make sense? You gotta understand, it's just he's being brainwashed. The third point that I want to impress upon you is who you're dealing with. It's a tinnik shenishman. Who you're dealing with? We got to believe our Torah. Ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. Gem l'chasod b'nei gem l'chasod. You got to understand. Baishonim b'nei baishonim. You've got to know who they are. And the ikur of the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew is smeim la'asis ritzon kainam. This is an halacha. Halacha is tzmeim lasis ritzayim kainam. Therefore, there is such a halacha kaifin I say atchiyem roitzani. If it wasn't for that, you couldn't be. You know, there's a din of kaifin I say atchiyem roitzani on a get. If he's mechuyev a get, he's a grusha l'kain godol. And he says the roitzani. Why? Because yitzri tokhe. Yeah. But like this, it's only by Jews that there's a halacha because tzmeim lasis ritzayim kainam. That's what you got to look at. That's what you got to look at. So I'll tell you a story to bring it home. To bring it home so that you can remember. There was once a fellow who was teaching in a yeshiva high school, and one of his kids, who was a young kid, maybe 14, 15 years old, his mother was having an operation in Chadera. So he goes to the hospital, and of course he's waiting in the waiting room. What does a Jewish boy do? His mother's having an operation. The end of the world operation, it was a simple operation, yeah, but it was an operation. So he's saying to him in the waiting room, in comes an old kibbutznik. This old kibbutznik walks into the waiting room. He walks over to this kid, he says, "What are you doing here?" He says, "My mother's having an operation." "Yeah, but what are you doing?" "I'm saying to him." He said, "You're saying to him? You're saying to him? Is that what we came back to this country for? A young fellow like you? It's time to throw away all these old medieval practices. You got to get rid of your superstitions. You got to be a man. Get up and live. Take your kippah, throw it out the window. Be redeemed. Be free. Come on. You're young. You're in your hometown." Kid, you know, he doesn't feel like talking to this guy. So he says to him, "Tell me, what are you doing here?" So this old kibbutznik says to him, "I came to pick up the body of my son." He says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "His son is sick, and the doctors can't find his vital signs are going. They're making an operation of yiyush, a despair. They don't think, they're sure it won't help, but he gave him permission, but the kid is dying, young man is going to die, and he came to pick up the body of his son." So the kid says to him, "What are you, crazy?" He said, "Take it to him here. Say to him, I mean, pray. What's the matter with you? I won't go for this nonsense, this superstition, this medieval. You get rid of it." Kid says, "Whoa, he doesn't want to stand near this guy in time of an operation. He wants to get out of here." So he goes over to the other side, don't talk to him, he won't look at him. He's saying this to him. Half an hour goes by, three quarters of an hour, I don't know how long. Out comes a doctor into the waiting room, approaches this old kibbutznik, and he says to this old kibbutznik, "The operation was successful. Your son will live." This old kibbutznik gets up, stands up on his feet, and he says, "Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad." Huh? Did you ever hear the expression, "The lady does protest too much"? You see, the maven understands. The maven understands if he's coming in here, this is a time for a culture war. You know, your son is dying. Sit there, mourn. Yeah? What's he yelling about? He'd like to pray. It's a little late for him. He's venting his spleen on a kid. Yeah? But deep in, Yisroel ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. Tzmeim lasis utzenkan, don't be fooled. It's there. If you're smart, you'll pick it up. If you're smart, you'll pick it up. you'll be able to see it. You've got to be able to really get to him, to see where he is. You understand? So the fourth point, you got to understand, it's there. You got to believe us. It's there. I mean, you're talking to Jews. Yeah? Talking to Jews. It's there. You got to be sensitive to pick it up. The fourth point that I want to make is that, look, you've got to learn to find out what's bothering the guy. What's bothering the guy? You got to relax and find out what is bothering the guy. It doesn't do any good. Never argue with people. You argue even if you win the argument. Please, my friends, remember. You argue, you'll be strong in your arguments. I remember as a young guy, I used to go to university at night. I learned to know you slow. So I figured I'll help these people. In my days, when you challenge someone, come on, I'll give you proof there's a God. You think you don't? I'll give you proof. They were stuck. It's like in the old West, you know, if you challenge a guy to a duel, he had to meet you at dawn, right? Yeah? Or high noon. In my days, when I was going to university, you weren't an intellectual unless you were willing to fight it out. Yeah? Today, it won't do you any good. They'll say, look, I'm not interested, buddy. That's it. But when I was a kid, if you said to someone, I'll give you evidence, I'll prove it to you, hey, he was stuck. So I used to fight with the guy. Sometimes I had his hand behind his back, and I pulled, and the guy said, uncle, okay. I figured, wow, a neshama, ah. Until I found out that everybody on the campus was avoiding me. They were passing the word around, watch out, this guy's a fanatic. If he gets your ear, he'll kill you. Watch out for this guy. You wouldn't talk to me anymore. Get it? You win, you lose. So never argue. Never argue. It won't do you a bit of good. You'll just create resentment. You get it? So the idea is find out what's going on. I'll tell you a story. One time, there was a fellow in the yeshiva. It was when we were very small. You know, I had started Ol Sameach. And I left Ol Sameach with five guys and we started Eisha Torah. So we started Eisha Torah. So there were a few guys, you know, five guys. There were 10 guys, 15 guys. Yeah. So each fellow who came in was precious. I went out fundraising. So I remember the guy called him up. He was from Connecticut, not far from New York. He said, oh, Rabbi, wonderful, please come in. I want the family to meet you. Come on in. I said, wow, okay, I'll go up there. I come in there, the whole house is full of relatives. Full of relatives. Yeah, and he starts introducing me. This is his brother, this is his sister, this is his uncle, this is his aunt. And here he says, this is my uncle, the atheist. I gave him all the proofs, and he's still an atheist. You prove it to him, Rabbi. I said, look, son, I said, Mark, we taught you. And I'm telling you, never challenge anyone. You challenge someone, he's on the defensive. Finish. He's not going to listen. You know, you challenge him. That's arguing. Yeah, never challenge him. If you have to, you know, there's some time and circumstances you have to. Never in public. If you do it in public, I mean, then now he really has to defend himself, right? In public, he's going to say, oh, you're right, I made a mistake. Forget it. If you have to, never in front of his friends. The rest of his life, he's going to, hey, how can he? He can't back down. If you have to, never in front of his family. You're going to live with him. If you have to, but for God, goodness sake, never in front of his wife or his children. Yeah. You've done the wrong thing. I get it. I'm not going to prove nothing to him. You challenged him in front of his friend, in front of his family, in front of his wife and children. I'm not going to prove anything to him. Yeah? All right. Time goes by. You know, I get acquainted with him. Okay. I take this fellow by the side, and my friends, this is a practical in. I take this fellow on the side, and I tell him, you know, my experience is I got 30 guys in the room, you know, come from secular backgrounds who think they're atheists. And I say to them, tell me who in this room has had a personal miracle. How many of you think say, I've had a miracle? How many of you think? Average 50%. They claim they're atheists, you understand? But they'll say, I had a miracle. Yeah? So this guy pipes up. He says, yeah, I also had a miracle. This atheist uncle, yeah? And he told me a very nice miracle. He says his sister, name was Chava, I remember, his sister was dying of cancer for 7 years. They were battling the cancer. 7 years she was dying, withering, and going worse, worse, worse. Finally she slips into a coma. She slips into a coma. They call the doctors. What are you going to do? The doctors say, fine. That's it. She's not going to get out of this. She's going to die tonight. She won't be alive by the morning. Well, you got to go tell the mother. The mother was still alive. No, we got to prepare her. This is terrible. So the whole brother and sister, they all got together and they go to the mother's house. And they start, they say, you know, Chava doesn't feel well. She said, yeah, so what's new? Well, she's gotten weaker. Yeah, so what is that? Well, she's going to die. Mother says, well, you talk that way. You don't talk that way. You know, how can you say such a terrible thing? That's terrible. How do you know? They say, well, the doctor said so. All the doctor said so. She says, the doctor said so? The doctor's on God. She takes out a tehillim. She says tehillim the whole night. In the morning, they come to the hospital. The sister was out of the coma. She got better. She left the hospital. And she lived another 10 years. And she died from other causes. So this guy who's saying he's an atheist, yeah, is agreeing with me that people see miracles, and is telling me his miracle, which happens to be a very convincing one. Is that right? You've got to understand, give him a chance. He's on the defensive. You've challenged him. They aren't atheists. Baloney. Baloney. They're not atheists. Don't take him seriously. And I'll tell you another story. To understand, you've got to understand where they're coming from. First yeshiva for Bali Tshuva that we had was called Mevasel Yerushalayim. That was in 66. So we had a fellow. He came in and he was interested. And finally, one day he said, Rabbi, okay, I want to hear the evidence. I'll consider the evidence. You sit it out with me. If the evidence is convincing, that's it. I agree. And finish. Okay, so I sat with him. 3 hours, 5 hours, you know, we were working. Finally he said, you know, you're right, I see it. I see one piece of evidence, two, three, four. That's it, I'm convinced. Thank you very much. From now on, I'm a Shomer Shabbos. You know, I'm a Jew, yeah. The next morning I come into the yeshiva. He says, he comes to me after the davening. He says, I'll never forgive you for the rest of my life. I said, what's the matter? What are you talking about? He said, you made a fool of me. I said, what are you talking about? How did I make a fool of you? He said, you made a fool of me. You showed me that there's evidence. You can prove that there is a God. So you made a fool out of me. I said, what are you talking about? He said, how come there are professors, geniuses, professors who don't believe in God? If there's evidence, do they have the evidence? You made a fool out of me. You convinced me that there's evidence which you made a fool out of me. So do you understand what's bothering this guy? You can give him evidence from today until next Shemitah. Yeah? There's one thing bothering him that you got to deal with. How can brilliant people who are supposed to be objective deny something if it can be proven? This is what's bothering him. That's what you got to deal with. Do you understand? You've got to find what is bothering the guy. Never mind, you've done a masterful job. Is it bothering him that he's challenged? Is it bothering him that he doesn't know how come? You got to find out what's bothering the guy. Don't address the question and think that you've done the job. Please, you're making a mistake. You've got to have the patience to find out what's the block. What's holding this guy back? You got it? And by the way, you know what the answer is? You know what the answer is? What? Gaiva? You know what the answer is? You see, genius, brilliance, is no defense against insanity. On the contrary. On the contrary. The more of a genius you are, the easier it is to be insane. You see, here's this poor Joe. He'd like to be Napoleon. So you tell him, Chaim, how can you be Napoleon? Everybody knows you're Chaim. He's in trouble, yeah? A genius, what's the problem? Didn't you ever hear of an alias? Incognito? Right? You say, Chaim, how can you be Napoleon? You don't even know French. Yeah? How can you be Napoleon? If he doesn't have, you know, little brains, it's kind of a tough time. Yeah? But a genius, he says, you never heard of amnesia? You know, amnesia, I mean, I forgot French. Big deal. Yeah? So you've got to understand this is a fact, and you've got to teach it to people. Ein Adam Chote, Ela Shenichnes Be'ruach Shtus. We say, a chet, which is a mistake, it only comes from temporary insanity. Just to want to look at the reality. Yeah? So good. That's a separate point we'll make later. But you've got to understand what's bothering the guy. Deal with what's bothering him. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Yeah.
That's assuming you're talking to the simple guy. You're talking to the professor. You don't have to even tell the professor.
No, the professor, you just have to know how to stick into the evidence, to the definitions, to the proofs, to it takes a little harder, yeah? But him, you got to get him out of his insanity, right? But you got to know where a person, what's bothering him. Yeah?
That's true. If the basis of this person's problem, well, the Yiddish guy is settled with the problem, but if it's the time of the problem, that he's just involved in the times of day-to-day ordinary life, it's not really good to do him on the second.
Wait a moment. I'm saying that it doesn't do any good dealing with him on a psychological level altogether unless you find out what's bothering the guy. That's my point over here. You think you're dealing with him and he's asking you back and forth and you're dealing with a psychological level and he's such an intelligent guy. It's type of bothering him. You gotta deal with the type. It's how come the professors, how come everybody doesn't believe in this? You gotta deal with that question. You got to find out what's bothering the guy rather than you're dealing with a psychological level. That's just the point that I was making. Is that understood? You've got to ask, you've got to find out where he is. Now, number five is that you've got to appreciate the worst thing that's bothering these people, the very worst thing that's bothering these people and that's going to make your job tough is a bad conscience. All the animosity, etc., is a bad conscience. And I'll tell you a story to bring it home. Yeah, I'll tell you a story. Once I had a fellow, his name was Andy Kanin. He's from Florida. He came into the yeshiva. He stayed with us 6 months. He became an Orthodox Jew. He gets a telephone call from home. His sister was visiting in Europe. Some fundamentalist Christians got her. She came home. She's a born-again Christian. But from the vicious sect. So she comes home, she tells her parents, they're the devil's eggs, they are the destroyers of God, they are blood-eating monsters, they are filth and all kind of horrible things. I mean, like, I terrible, evil, the bread is contaminated, terrible. They call them up, they say, look, you're sticking an arrow over there. Come on, help us. Comes into my office and says, look, I'm only here 6 months. I didn't really learn that much, etc. But what should I do? My sister, my parents, I have to go help them. I got to do what I can. I don't know what I can do, but I got to pitch in. What can you tell a guy? You got to pitch in. Goes home. He's home 1 week, and the parents throw one of the kids out of the house. Who did they throw out of the house? Him. How come? He says, well, I can't eat then. I'm eating kosher now. What? Our food isn't good enough for you? Huh? Shabbos, I don't know. We're not Jews. Out of the house! Does that drill in? Is that clear enough? What's the problem? She's saying you drink blood. You are crucifiers of God himself, Judas, serpent's egg. They say, the poor kid. You got to do something for her. Yeah? He says, look, I'm not telling you what's right or wrong. I want to eat kosher. Do you see how obvious that is? Yeah? So you got to understand, you're walking around, they think you're judging them and they don't feel too good. You've got to reassure them. You want a hearing. The guy who's coming out to fight you, you gotta reassure him. You gotta tell him, look, buddy, we don't judge anyone. We don't judge anyone. The Almighty will judge us. We can't really judge anyone. We can't judge. You're not allowed, halacha, you're not allowed to kill this guy to save your own life. He's ochel talfas, he's a bum, a drunkard, a wife beater, whatever you want. You don't know. My chos is the dumb of the doch somek tvei, dumb of dumb of the chav of somek tvei. You don't know. We can't judge another human being. The Chavis Halavavis and the Ramban says, every human being, and this is what you gotta do, because you can't fool them, you know. You've got to look for every human being that you're dealing with, he has a mile that you don't have. And that's what you gotta focus on. There's an old musavot, the only reason that we have two eyes is you look with one eye at the mila of your chaver and the other eye at your chisol. But if you don't love them, if you don't feel with them, if you don't reassure them and tell them, then their bad conscience will turn them into enemies. You'll have enemies. You've got to really get there. It's a piece of practical, I'm telling you, friends, you want to do something. And if you do it, you'll win. You'll win, because ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, as long as they don't feel on the defensive, that's the problem, they're on the defensive. Do you see that? That's ending Kanin's parents. I mean, he's treating them, they love their son, but they feel, our own son is rejecting me, yeah? I'm no good. That's the whole problem. And they have a bad conscience. When the daughter rejects him, they say, what can we do for her? Yeah? But we can't really, we can't reject them. We don't know who's better. You don't know who's better. Makes sense, very important. Yeah. Number six is that you gotta teach, you see, they're Christians. They're brought up in a Christian society. So you gotta teach them half a loaf is better than none. You know, do one mitzvah. Very difficult. It gets into their bones. I'll tell you a story. My father, the Zichrono Livracha, used to go every Sunday in America. He had a business, and Sunday you couldn't open your business in those days, so every Sunday he would go out collecting for Eretz Yisrael. So he would go into a building, and not chasuvah, he didn't take any money, but a mitzvah, take a few hours and collect money for Eretz Yisrael. So he'd go into a building, and all the Jews he knew, he'd collect the money, he'd speak to them in Torah a little bit, tell them a sipur, a chassidish Jew, and then they go on to a next building. One day he goes through this building, he's on the stairs leaving the building. A Jew walks over to him and he says, I know why you don't come to my house. So I didn't know me, you know. He says, why do you think I didn't come to your house collecting? He says, because I'm a Mechal Shabbos, so you don't want my money. So I said, Chas v'chalil, I didn't know you. Next time I come, I'll visit you. All right, the next time he comes to this house, next sure he goes into this Jew. They sit down, he starts talking to him and learning a little bit. He sees the man is a Talmud Chochem, a fine man, good man. He takes his money, and he's getting up to leave. He says, pardon, but explain to me, how come a Jew like you, a fine man like you, how come you're a Machal Shabbat? So the guy tells him his woes. He came, he got fired from one job, another job. He has a family, he has children. He's got to live, it's impossible. He couldn't do it, he broke. He's a Machal Shabbat, yeah? So my father said to him, look, I'm not going to argue with you whether you should or you shouldn't. That's not the point. But you yourself say you want to be a Shem HaShabbos. Yeah? Except the circumstances. You can't. That's your time. Right? All right. But Friday night, you come home. So you come home late. But you daven Ma'ariv. You make Kiddush. You keep Shabbos in the house. You don't smoke. Don't turn on the light. Wife should light candles. In the morning, you get up a little earlier. Daven with a minion, make kiddush. If you can't walk to work, leave your pencil, whatever you're doing, your scissors, leave it with somebody you can trust over there, whatever you're doing, whatever you can make noise. I mean, you say him. He says, you're right. He says, you're right. Kept whatever he could, first Shabbos, second, the third Shabbos, the fourth Shabbos, he gave up his job. Became a Shem Shabbos. You got to understand that there is a psychology even in a Jew. If I'm no good, finished. Which will mean that Chas v'Chalil will go all the way. You understand that? So how much more in this Christian society, understand, they say one chet and you're damned forever. Yeah? Yeah? We're different. You tell a guy, look, you're doing mitzvahs. Why not get credit for it? Yeah? You're doing mitzvahs. Don't you try to help people? That's chesed. Yeah? Do you think you should like nice people? That's ava. Show them you're doing mitzvahs. You care about people, you're doing mitzvahs. Get credit for it. It's not all or nothing. One mitzvah, you're a world ahead. And if you can get them, even on a trial basis, to keep a Friday night, make a kiddush, it will save. See, do one mitzvah. Trying to say a prayer. Shabbos has got a power, even a Friday night. And there's a way of getting him. You see, you've got to look at it. Don't worry about how to sell it, whether he's a maimon, he's not a maimon. There's a way of getting him. There was once, I was in a parlor meeting in Chicago. So a woman pipes up in the meeting, you know, we're talking, and a woman pipes up and she says, "Tell me, Rabbi," she says, "why don't we have what these Mormons have?" I said, "you know, what?" You see, they have one night a week. They do nothing. Only the family gets together. They don't even answer a telephone. No radio. One night a week. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. Mormons do. Yeah. But you got to sell them. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. One night. You'll get something out of it. You got to get them... Try, do, work, a prayer. You got a Father in heaven. Don't be a fool. Talk to him. You know, it can work for you. You're having trouble with your children. Put in a prayer. Use it. A mitzvah, gereres mitzvah. Schar mitzvah, mitzvah. Use it. Get him to do something. It will help you. Anything you get him to do. There are things that are more powerful. Things that are less powerful. But Shabbos, very powerful. Prayer, very powerful. It's just that it's hard to get them consistent into prayer. It's much easier into a Friday night. Anybody will become a Friday night Shomer Shabbos, I guarantee in the end it will keep mitzvahs. In the end, the guy will keep mitzvahs. I mean, it's not a guarantee. It's 85%. 85% if he's keeping it as Shabbos. 85%. Remember, this is a step in. If a guy is mechallel in the Shabbos in the morning, you understand he's a shomer Shabbos, it's mechallel Shabbos in the morning, 85% will wind up with nothing. Yeah? But coming in on the way in, not so bad, it tastes good, it will go. Try it out. Look, first of all, you got to understand the mitzvah is a mitzvah. It's just strategic. You get him to put up a mezuzah, that's good. Get him to keep kosher in the home, that's good. It's not all or nothing. It's not all or nothing. I say, for us to realize, and you can tell it to people that they can understand that a Jewish religion is a little different. You know, we have Tayag Mitzvahs, 613. One of them is Shaloi Lishkovim Zocho. Yeah? Homosexuality, skila. Bad news. No good. There's another mitzvah. Don't have homosexual relations with your father. Now, who's the Rebbein Shalom talking to? Yeah? I mean, you know, one's enough, right? Yeah? We'd say the heck with him. You know, drop dead. Yeah? Yeah? The Rebbein Shalom says, stop here. But not your father. Is that right? Not your father. You're better off. Not with your father. Mitzvah is worth everything. You guys got to understand. The Gro, if you know how to learn, the Evan Shleiman in the Gro, it says the schar of one mitzvah, it's worth going through all of Gehenna. Everybody's Gehenna to get the schar of one mitzvah. Big Mazaka, a Jew with one mitzvah. Now, Lubavitch should do it. Great. You know, Tefillin. It's a mitzvah. The smart money is getting the right mitzvah. Get him a prayer. Get him to be a Shomer Shabbos, something that will affect them. A mezuzah is better than tefillin because it's there. If you can get him to say Shema, if you can get him to understand, but a mitzvah is powerful. Number one more point in seven is that the most important thing of all is to make him appreciate Jewishness, to be Jewish, most important thing. Now, you guys, I'm going to tell you, what I teach. Fellas coming in, first time I see them, first time they're in the school, I say to them, look, you visit a yeshiva, the least that I can do is tell you what a yeshiva is about. Yeah? Now, first of all, you guys, you've got to appreciate, you learn Judaism from Westerners, which is Christian, atheist, anti-Jewish. Learning Judaism from the Western press or from the Western society is like learning about capitalism at Moscow University. If you learned about capitalism at Moscow University and you meet a real-life capitalist, you want to know, where do you keep the blood, you know? So you guys, you walk into yeshiva, you look at me, you say, Rabbi, where do you keep the stones? You know, before, when you throw them on Shabbos, where do you keep the stones? Right? And you think that I want to put your black hat on you and long sideburns and make you swear off women. Yeah? That's the way they look at us, right? So, the first thing is, learn Judaism from a Jew. You want to learn capitalism, not from Moscow University, but from a capitalist. Learn Judaism from a Jew, from somebody who believes in it. Yeah? The second thing I say to them is, and pass the word around. Take a responsibility. The second thing is that in Judaism we say, the very first principle of Judaism is, don't believe anyone. You hear that? Don't believe anyone, because if you believe what you're told, then if you're in Haiti, you'll be a voodoo worshiper. If you're in Borneo, you'll be a headhunter. If you're in Moscow, you'll be a communist. Don't believe anyone. You got to challenge your own society. You got to say, prove it to me. Show me. Check it out. What's the evidence? What's the evidence for? What's the evidence again? Don't believe me. Check it out. Check this out. Is this true? You shouldn't believe anyone? You should investigate for yourself? Of course it is. The second thing, Judaism has something to do with living. Yeah? What do we Jews say is our obligation to God? You know, something to do with God. What do we say? What do you think? Now, he's out to do what? And they are confused. So you tell them, look, check it out. We Jews, we taught the world monotheism. You know what monotheism is? Everybody knows that. That they still know. Yeah, we taught the world monotheism. Yeah. So you know what monotheism is? Monotheism means one God who created the whole universe, right? Time and space, the galaxies. Time and space itself is a creation from nothing, right? A God like that, awesome, isn't it? Awesome. Awesome. Yeah? All right, now what in the world can you do for God? It's something you should do for him. Why? You're going to bring him his slippers, yeah? A cup of coffee, a piece of cake, a fat cow, or a plate of blood? Is that what you can do for him? It's ridiculous. They laugh. They see it. It's ridiculous. All right, so are you going to praise him? You know, buck him up. I'll tell him how great he is. Build him up. Yeah? You're going to tell God how great he is? He needs your praise? So the guy says, so then why do you praise him? Why do you praise him? Think for yourself. Check it out. You know why you praise him? You got to know who your God is. It's good for you. It's not good for him. Yeah. All right. So what else can you do? Well, I'll read his book. He's a bestseller. He creates a universe that little specks on earth are reading his book. Yeah. Well, he wants us to obey him. That's it. He needs somebody to obey him. And he said, if God Almighty wanted us to obey him, yeah, you know, Reverend Moon can get 40,000 zombies. He can get 4 billion. What do you think? God, right? If he wanted us zombies, we'd all do exactly what he wants. Yeah? Well, then what's it about? What does Judaism say? And you've got to tell him, and you've got to understand him. In Judaism, we say, Avinu Avrahamon. When you have children, you know you don't want your children to take care of you, God forbid. You don't want them. That isn't why you have children, so that they praise you. You don't have children so that they obey you. You only want one thing from your children, what's good for them. Their pleasure is your pleasure. You want them to be happy. You want them to accomplish everything for them. But they turn around And they say, yeah, my father, he's got this obsession. I got to brush my teeth every night. It doesn't even get dirty. Look, my teeth dirty. Yeah. Nuts. Ritual. Ritual. That's what your kids will say. But the Almighty, what He wants is Torah Chaim, what you want to teach your children. So, when you have children, and you have two kids, and if you have two kids, is it likely that they're going to fight? Anybody who has a brother and sister says, yeah. Right? Okay. So what are you going to do? You're going to say, who wins? Let's see. Or you're going to say, don't hit your sister. Right? Say, okay, don't hit your sister. What are they going to say? She hit me first. Right? What are you going to say? Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All right. You have two children. Is it possible one is going to say, I hate my sister, I hate my brother? Yeah, so what are you going to say? It happens? Or, don't talk that way. I'm only telling you the truth. You got to love her. Says, how can I love a little skunk like that? Yeah. And what are you going to do? You're going to hit him and say, you better... The Almighty says, love your brother, love your sister. Teach you how. The Almighty says, don't hit your brother. Teach you how to get over a grudge. Don't bear a grudge. Don't take revenge, but you got to teach people how. But everybody knows love your neighbor as yourself is a Jewish thing. Is that pleasure? The greatest pleasure most human beings will ever have in their lives is love. Love your brother, love more. We'll teach you how, but you got to know how to teach people how. You've got to understand. You've got to teach people how. You've got to learn it. Greatest pleasure is to love God. If you can get so much pleasure, if your parents get that much pleasure out of you, then certainly it should be much more pleasure to love God, right? So you got to teach people how. All right, look. We're a little out of time. I want to leave some time for some questions. There's an awful lot to learn about Kiruv. There is an awful lot to learn, and it's a big responsibility. But I'd like to end with another story. I'll tell you a story of a fellow who came into the yeshiva. His name was Jim Heller. This guy walks into the yeshiva. Somebody brought him in, and I meet him. You know, you gotta relax the guy, talk to him. Where are you from? Silver Springs, Maryland. What are you doing? He's going to college. Which? Harvard. What's your field? Going for a PhD in what field? Divinity. Divinity? You know, Harvard University has a school for Presbyterian ministers. I said, are you going to become a Presbyterian minister? Jewish boy, yeah. Checked it out beforehand. You're going to become a Presbyterian minister? He says he is already. He was born, he's been ordained. He has a part-time shteller in Washington, D.C. He goes Sunday mornings from Boston to Washington, D.C., gives his sermon, tends to his congregation at night, he goes back and he's studying for his PhD. So, if you want to get into Kiruv or in any field of endeavor, you got to learn something, never lose your temper. Right? You guys know that. Never lose your temper. You lose your temper, you start a fight, never lose your temper. But you certainly lost the custom, right? But occasionally, I fail too. And this was one of the occasions. Here's a nice Jewish boy turns into a Christian minister. I call him all kinds of very bad names. Amongst which, I mentioned that he was a dirty traitor. You know, but that's not the worst, believe me. It wasn't the worst name I said to him. But I lost my temper, and I let him have it. Everything I had. Amongst which, I said, you're a dirty traitor. So, of course, he lost his temper. And he gets up, and he starts banging on the table, and he says, don't you call me a traitor. Amongst everything else, that's what went into him. Yeah? Don't you call me a traitor, he says. I talked to 10 rabbis. 10 rabbis. They didn't know what they were talking about. And they weren't even sincere. You can imagine he found such 10 rabbis? Yeah? They didn't know what they were talking about, and they weren't even sincere. He says, at least my professors at Harvard, they might not know what they're talking about. But they're sincere. You see, that calmed me down. Here he's saying the professors don't know what they're talking about. Oh, this is a chevaman. I started laughing. I said, okay, listen, Jim, I'll show you. We know what we're talking about, and we're sincere. Will you stay with us? I mean, you say the whole thing is, you know, I'll show you. We know what we're talking about, and we're sincere. Will you stay with us? He says, listen, Rabbi, I was born a Jew. You show me? Of course I'll stay. I mean, I got a responsibility. Of course. So he stayed. We had discussions. The guy went through heck. You understand, it is a temptation to become a Christian. You're saved, you're through. You've got to understand, it's not that simple. It's avodah zarah, but it's deep. It's a temptation, and you've got to be afraid to move out. And it was heck for him, but he went through it, and he fought it, and he fought it, and he fought it. Finally, he was with us maybe 2 months working it out, and he decided he's through with it, he's finished. Thank God, came in, he's going to be a Shema Mitzvah, and of course he's going to learn, because he's a sincere guy, of course he's going to learn. But he says he has to go back to the United States of America, he's going to make it a short trip, he'll be there 6 weeks, he has to go back. I said, what are you talking about? 2 months you learned, you just settled, you don't know anything, how can you go back? You're not going back. I have to go back. Why? I have to go home to apologize to my parents. I said, don't be silly, I said. Call them up, tell them you're a Jew, they'll be tickled pink. you don't have to apologize. He says, Rabbi, I know how much pain I gave them. I can't just call them up and say it was a mistake. I have to go home personally and make it good. He has to make it good to them personally. So, couldn't dissuade him. He goes on back. And he stays there for 6 weeks. And thank God he shows up. That was tickled pink, he shows up. So I asked him, Jim, so how'd it go? How was your trip? He says it was beautiful, it was great. His father's a dentist, he took off from work, from his office. His mother's a librarian, she took off from work. They took a camper, they went out for a couple of weeks. They were together, they cried, they laughed, they reminisced, nostalgia, they hugged, they kissed, and they'd never been so close. It was wonderful. So, Jim, how'd it go? He says, I told you, Rabbi, great, Jim. How'd it go? He says, yeah, so he went to Harvard. No, so how'd it go? Well, I talked to the professor. So I go, so I told him, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't need blood. You don't know what you're talking about. That is what it means. How'd it go? He says, the professor said, look, Jim, you do your thing. We'll do our thing. Very friendly. He went to the dean of Harvard Divinity School, and he told the dean of Harvard Divinity School, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah? The dean of Harvard Divinity School said to Jim Heller, he said, look, Jim, I didn't know what a Jewish boy was doing here in the first place. In Harvard Divinity School, they gave Jim Heller a master's in divinity with a transcript from Eshet Torah. Nice, huh? So then he goes back to Washington, D.C., and he had a friend in Washington, D.C., who was a Jew for Yoshka, a Jew for Jesus, yeah? He tells his friend, the Jewish boy, but they were both into Christianity. This is messianic. This is the bullet. But this is so. He tells him, "You don't know what you're talking about. You know, do all these things that you it was full of baloney." He says, "Over there, he felt hate. This wasn't a friendly conversation anymore. This was the atmosphere was heavy." But the guy argued with him, discussed and argued, went from sentence, pasuk to pasuk, finally at the end of the day, they were both exhausted. The guy says to him, look, come back tomorrow. He came back a second day, the same thing. A third day, the same thing. Hatred. Finally, at the end of the third day with hatred, this guy looks at him and he says to him, okay, he says, Jim, logically, I have no answer for you. But you tell me, Jim, he says, who's out there on the campus talking to Jewish kids who don't have any religion, who don't have any God, who don't have any morality? Who's out there reaching for them? We Jews for Jesus, or you Orthodox Jews? Jim Heller said at that moment he made his decision and he's going to be out there. I'm congratulating you guys, boy. There's really no choice. They're out there, and we shouldn't be. You got to make it. All right, any questions? We'll give you 12 minutes for questions.
What do you think the place of an organization is in Europe, and what do you think an individual can accomplish without an umbrella organization?
So I think you came in late. And the first story I told was about a guy who had no choice. They'll tell you. You heard that. An individual can do a great deal. I think it's crazy. We got to organize. This is war. See, an individual parachutes into Nazi-occupied Germany. He can kill quite a few Germans, maybe save one or two Jews. This is war. You need organization. You need tools. You need weapons. You need backup, you need strategy, I don't believe in the individual. I'm trying to make an organization. But certainly if you're going to parachute into Nazi Germany to save our Jewish brethren, yeah, I'll say a prayer for you, and I'll say, great hero. Yeah, this isn't as bad, you can come back, okay. I didn't mean that it's a suicide mission, no. Don't get me wrong. Guys can accomplish, but it's not the way. It's strategy. That's my opinion. Unfortunately, it's a little difficult to get Jews organized.
Is it possible for us to tap into certain strategies that Ishtar has developed?
100%. 100%. It would be our pleasure. 100%.
Isn't the Jewish cop saying different? Not anti. Not that people are anti. They're just different.
Well, that's only, you see, let me tell you. You see, today they're traveling with goy. So they bring in a fellow, Jews, goy, they're traveling. So they bring me in a fellow, so they've got a name John, and they've got a name Paul. Yeah? The name doesn't tell you anything, right? You don't know who's a Jew, who's a goy, right? So they find out beforehand, and they tell me, John is a Jew, Paul is the goy, talk to John, right? And I say, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? Sit down. I said, what's your name? Where are you from? What's your name? Where are you from? John is a Jew. Hello? And I ignore the guy. Yeah? One time they make a mistake. They tell me, John is the Jew, Paul is the guy. It was the other way. I say, well, John, yeah, how are you? Where are you from? Mississippi. His mother is a nurse. His father is a corporal in the Marines. He's telling me one thing after the other. I'm looking, wow, where are we Jews gone to? Wow. Finally, I start moving in on him. I tell him, you got to know what life is about. I'm moving in on him, and I tell him, well, what about your heritage? Don't you have to? He says, I'm not Jewish. Oh, I say, it dawns on me. Oh, it was a mistake. Oh, pardon me, I didn't mean to. Paul! They both jump on me. What's the matter? Just because he's a guy, you don't want to talk to him? I tell him, look, we can fill our place of guy. They're not afraid. They're fascinated. You have to have something to fascinate people. We'll teach you what pleasure is about. They're fascinated. Is love an obligation or happening? We can fill it up. I say, look, my friend, I told the guy, look, you see, that's not fair to this guy. He should go home, study Christianity. What does he know? I'll make mincemeat. I'll make him a Jew no time flat. He doesn't know the first thing. He should go home, study Christianity. If he becomes a priest, then he wants to discuss it with me. Welcome. Come on, let's discuss it. But if he's a priest and a Jewish boy wants to learn about Christianity, he should send him to me. Yeah? Isn't that fair? But believe me, Christians, there's no problem. They come like honey. Like honey. They all want to stay. Yeah? They all want to stay. It's the Jews got this bad conscience. You do have to talk attractively. You can't say to a guy, hey, listen, we'll give you a black coat and and that ain't the approach. Yeah? We'll teach you how to be happy. Happiness is an obligation. If du es Hashem besimcha, joy is an obligation. Who's going to turn you off? They want to know. But you're going to be able to deliver the goods. But a Jew, he's on the defensive. Yeah? He's going to start arguing with you from go. Yeah? Yeah.
Instead of a question, mivatnim lechutz, mivatnim lefnim.
what's the matter with the Orthodox communities and the towns we'll be going to that they're not doing it, and how do you suggest, if at all, that we tap into their resources to make them Shabbat folks?
So I say, again, it's reassurance. And you saw, it's Mayim Lassus, it's in Kainim. They all want to do. They just say, how am I going to answer? What am I going to do? Just the way. You can find from your own friends. That's the only reason they're not doing it. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. They might reject me. So the first thing is make it easy. Make it easy. Dip their foot into the water where it's safe, you know, where it won't be embarrassed. And remember, a host told me that one time, you know, we give him a little spiel. When you started yeshivas, you take care of sending the guys around. So I tell them what to do, what to say, and how to do, and what kind of questions. You know, they all think that the guy's going to ask him, which foot do you make chalitza? You know, they what kind of questions are going to come? You know, what kind of questions are going to come? You know, so finally, the guy accepted, and he was learning. He was saying something about Moshe Rabbeinu and this, and he was telling his Torah at the table. And the guy says, "Pardon me, can I ask you a question? Yeah, can I ask you a question?" And the guy says, "Here it comes! Here it comes! Oy vey, what?" All right, go ahead, ask the question. He says, what was Moshe's last name? Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, okay, pleasure meeting you guys. And good work out.
You have been listening to Voices from Jerusalem. For a complete listing of our cassettes, see our web store at aish.com. For a free cassette catalog, email us at voices@aish.com. Or call toll-free in the U.S. 1-800-VOICES-3. Our main office is at 1 Western Wall Plaza, Jerusalem, Israel. Shalom from Jerusalem.